United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A few takeaways as the NATO summit in Washington wrapped up. G7 foreign ministers met on the sidelines with Ukraine and the Middle East topping their agenda. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the G7's work complements the work that's being done at NATO.
I think you see through the G7 extraordinary collaboration and coordination on the critical issues of our time, including, of course, Russia's aggression against Ukraine, the ongoing challenges in the Middle East, and all the work that we're doing together in the Indo-Pacific.
G7 leaders met in June in Italy, where they affirmed their support for Ukraine, announced a plan to provide Ukraine with $50 billion in new financing, and called for a comprehensive deal in Gaza to lead to an immediate ceasefire. Meanwhile, AP correspondent Charles Iledesma reports Beijing is telling NATO not to create chaos in Asia.
China's accused NATO of seeking security at the expense of others and told the alliance not to bring the same chaos to Asia. The statement from a foreign ministry spokesperson comes a day after NATO labelled China a decisive enabler of Russia's war against Ukraine. Lin Jian said at a daily briefing, NATO agitating about China's responsibility on the Ukraine issue is unreasonable and has sinister motives, adding the bloc's so-called security comes at the cost of security of other countries. Has backed Russia's contention that NATO's expansion poses a threat to Russia. I'm Charles Villadesma.
An Australian army private and her husband are accused of spying for Russia, and the first charges brought under Australia's sweeping espionage laws enacted in 2018. The Russian-born couple are Australian citizens with Russian passports and are scheduled to appear in Brisbane Magistrates Court Friday. They're each charged with one count of preparing for an espionage offense. This is VOA News. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports U.S. President Joe Biden has used a rare solo news conference to forcefully defend both his record and his decision to stay in the presidential race.
Still, the president notes he does need to allay fears about his age and fitness.
If I slow down, I can't get the job done. That's a sign that I shouldn't be doing it.
Saying there is no indication of that yet, but he did make two flubs within 2 hours. Answering the news conference's first question about Vice President Harris.
I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she's not qualified to be president.
And earlier at a NATO summit event with Ukraine's leader.
Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin.
Before quickly catching himself.
President Zelensky, I'm so focused on beating Putin, we got to worry about it. Anyway, Mr. President.
I'm better.
You are a hell of a lot better.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The head of the U.S. agency overseeing American humanitarian assistance worldwide says Israel has agreed to an improved system across the Gaza Strip to ensure humanitarian workers and aid can more safely move around. Samantha Power, administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, said that Israel has also taken new steps to increase the flow of aid through its port of Ashdod, just north of Gaza. Humanitarian workers have complained throughout the war that the system by which the Israeli military assures safe passage to aid has been a failure. Power said a system by which the UN and Israeli military communicate more closely will be extended across Gaza. AP correspondent Joe Federman reports the Israeli military has ordered a mass evacuation of the Gaza Strip's largest city.
The Israeli military has ordered a mass evacuation from the Gaza Strip's largest city. Most of Gaza City's people evacuated long ago when Israel sent its troops into the city at the beginning of the war, but tens of thousands of people are believed to remain behind. This has been a recurring pattern throughout the war, where the Israeli army returns to areas where previously it had said it was done operating.
That is AP's Joe Fetterman reporting. The world's population is now expected to grow by more than 2 billion people in the next decades and peak in the 2080s at around 10.3 billion, which is a major shift from a decade ago. That's according to a new report by the United Nations Thursday. The report released on World Population Day says that the global population is then expected to decline to around 10.2 billion by the end of the century. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, July 12, and here are some of the stories we are following. President Biden gives his first news conference since the June 27 first debate with former President Trump.
The consideration is that I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president. I beat him once, and I will beat him again.
Botswana pledges continued support for Mozambique after the withdrawal of regional troops. An ECOWAS call says Nigerian authorities violated the rights of protesters in 2020. A Kenyan opposition leader says President Ruto's sacking of his entire cabinet is too little too late.
Our children did not die so that we get state jobs. People want a complete turnaround. So the message to William Ruto is shape up or ship out entirely.
Millions still face inequality as the international community marks World Population Day. The stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Joe Biden gives his first news conference on Thursday night since his poor performance during the June 27, 2024 first debate with former President Donald Trump. The news conference came at the end of a three-day NATO meeting in Washington. Biden outlined the importance of U.S. membership in NATO.
But I made it clear, a strong NATO is essential to American security. And I believe the obligation of Article 5 is sacred. I made it clear that I will not bow down to Putin. I will not walk away from Ukraine. I will keep NATO strong. That's exactly what we did and exactly what we'll continue to do. Now, the future of American policy is up to the American people. This is much more than a political question. It's more than that. It's a national security issue. Don't reduce this to the usual testament that people talk about, issues of being a political campaign. It's far too important. It's about the world we live in for decades to come. Every American must ask herself or himself, is the world safer with NATO? Are you safer? Is your family safer? I believe the American people know the answer to all those questions is yes.
President Biden also brushed off calls from some in the Democratic Party for him to step aside as a candidate because of his age and his poor performance during the June 27 debate.
The fact is that the consideration is that I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president. I beat him once, and I will beat him again. Secondly, the idea... I served in the Senate a long time. The idea that senators and congressmen running for office worry about the ticket is not unusual. And I might add, there are at least five presidents running or incumbent presidents who had lower numbers than I have now, later in the campaign. So there's a long way to go in this campaign. And so... I'm just going to keep moving. And because, look, I got more work to do. We got more work to finish. There's so much. We made so much progress. Think about it. Think about where we are economically relative to the rest of the world. Name me a world leader who wouldn't want to trade places with our economy. We've created over 800,000 manufacturing jobs, 1.5 million jobs. I mean, so things are moving. We got more to go. Working class people still have need help. Corporate greed is still at large. Their prices, the corporate profits have doubled.
That was President Joe Biden speaking Thursday night during his first news conference since his performance during the June 27, 2024 debate with former President Donald Trump. In Kenya, a leading opposition member says President William Ruto's sacking of his entire cabinet is an action that is too little too late. On Thursday, President Ruto fired all but his foreign minister in response to anti-tax protests. He said he will consult with the other political stakeholders In reconstituting the cabinet, Martha Karua is the leader of the National Rainbow Coalition Kenya NARC Kenya Party. She served as Raila Odinga's running mate during the 2022 presidential election. Karua tells me that President Ruto must first release without condition all arrested Gen Z protesters, apologize, and then compensate them.
There are actions that you should do ahead of everything else. Adhere to the rule of law, stop arbitrary arrests, stop abduction and murder of mainly our youth, and also have all those peaceful protesters who have been arrested and arraigned on trumped-up charges released unconditionally. Also, have the police who have killed and maimed and injured unnecessarily to be arrested and charged. Sack the senior police officers who supervised that exercise. He also should apologize for the loss of life, for the abductions, and for the injured, and compensate them.
But, Madam, do you give the president some credit? The action he's taken shows that he's listening to the people.
He's been pushed to a corner. He's done it reluctantly. Remember, three times he has congratulated the police for the criminal act of killing peaceful demonstrators. Is this a person you want to credit with anything? He's only giving an inch when pushed to the corner. What the Gen Z they're asking for is just transparency and accountability. They want the state to work for the people, not for the ruling elite.
President Ruto said that he's willing to involve other political stakeholders in reconstituting the cabinet. Will you be willing, or members of your coalition, be willing to join the president in putting together a new government?
I will speak for myself and for NARC Kenya. The answer is no. Our children did not die so that we get state jobs. People want a complete turnaround. So the message to William Ruto is shape up or ship out entirely. No half measure. And the things the Gen Z have been demanding for, they do not need any dialogue. They do not need a coalition government to move them. Follow the rule of law. Implement the constitution.
Earlier in the week, I think the Gen Z movement that has been protesting did accuse Mr. Odinga and your party of trying to co-opt or hijack their movement. Let me give you a chance to react to that comment.
The Gen Z only accused him as an individual, not all of us. Azimio is a coalition of parties. I had a party called NARC Kenya. And I can tell you straight away that even as Azimio, we had not had a meeting. I had Mr. Odinga through the media, just like everybody else. So I don't know when he referred to we, whom he was referring to. And his party members have come up when questioned by Gen Z to say that he was representing his party ODM. I would not want to speak for them, but we certainly are not party to that. We should not hijack, and I said it on Twitter, the Gen Z demands and try to speak for them. The Gen Z have done very well for themselves. They've done more than we did as Azimio last year. Where we failed, they have succeeded. I would want to step back myself and give them a chance to do what they're doing, because they're doing it right and they're doing it well.
Martha Karua is the leader of the National Rainbow Coalition Kenya Party in the Azimio Coalition. She served as Raila Odinga's running mate during the 2022 presidential elections, and she was speaking with us from Nairobi. A regional African court has ruled that Nigerian authorities violated the rights of protesters during mass demonstrations against police brutality in 2020. The protest, dubbed End SARS, called for the disbanding of the Special Anti-Robbery Squad after allegations of torture, extortion, and extrajudicial killings. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The Court of Justice, linked with the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, issued a verdict Wednesday accusing Nigerian authorities of using disproportionate force in its response to protests almost 4 years ago. The ECOWAS court verdict follows a suit filed by a coalition of human rights activists and organizations in late 2021, 1 year after the mass protests demanding authorities disband the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, or SARS, police unit. The unit was accused of extortion, torture, and extrajudicial killings. Applicants who filed the lawsuit, Obianeju Ude, Perpetual Kamsi, and Dabiaroluwa Adeyinka, alleged severe human rights violations by state agents during their participation in putting down the street protests. A three-member panel of justices at the court determined Nigeria's government applied too much force while responding to the protests. Bolaji Gabari, lead counsel representing the applicants, welcomed the verdict.
Justice has finally been achieved and obtained. There was a lot of denial, even from the government, before they eventually set up the panels. What we were really looking for was to get an affirmation that this really happened. This judgment actually just affirms what we have been saying.
The ECOWAS court also ordered Nigerian government to compensate applicants with $6,400, or about 10 million naira each, and conduct investigations into the human rights abuses and show progress on holding offenders responsible within 6 months. The ECOWAS court also stated that the use of live rounds against protesters at the Lekki toll gate on the night of October 20, 2020 caused fear, and that the Nigerian government did not present evidence refuting those allegations. Authorities have not responded to the court ruling, and a national police spokesperson did not take VOA's calls for comment. But human rights groups like Amnesty International and some activists welcomed the court's decision as a significant victory for human rights in Nigeria. Nelson Olanibekun is a human rights lawyer and founder of Citizens Gavel.
The ECOWAS court's judgment came at the right time, especially now that Nigerians are going through a tough time. And there is also a regional move where Africans largely, they are recognizing their power as citizens. For example, what happened in Kenya, people are demanding accountability from their government.
Thousands of young Nigerians poured into the streets in October of 2020 to demand the dissolution of the notorious SARS police unit. But the protests soon expanded to call for better governance before it was forcefully quelled the night of October 20. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 12. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi has promised to continue supporting Mozambique in its fight against violent extremism in the oil and gas-rich province of Cabo Delgado, even after the imminent departure of Southern African troops from the troubled region. Charles Maguiro reports from Mozambique's capital, Maputo.
Addressing a media conference upon his arrival in the Mozambican capital, Maputo, late Wednesday, Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi said the withdrawal of troops from Cabo Delgado does not mark the end of his country's support in combating violent extremism. He said Botswana remains ready to assist Mozambique.
In the military and security space, we're committed to sharing our know-how and expertise because we are to you what you are to us. And just to be clear, we will stand shoulder to shoulder with the people of Mozambique in their quest for peace. So any instability, such as we witnessed, we'll be ready to intervene.
Botswana is the second country following Tanzania to pledge continued support for Mozambique after the departure of troops from SADC, the Southern African Development Community. The SADC troops are due to leave Mozambique week on Monday, July 15, due to financial issues. After holding official talks with Masisi at his seaside palace in Maputo late Wednesday, Mozambican President Filipe Nyusi thanked his visitor for Botswana's role in the fight against terrorism in Cabo Delgado. Nyusi said that together we work to combat these attacks and this help does not end. There are many ways Masisi is supporting Mozambique and that will continue. We are training our officers, our military personnel in Botswana, and the floor will continue because these are the ones who must ensure the continuation of the fight, Nyusi says. The SADC mission consisted of troops from Angola, Botswana, Democratic Republic of Congo, Lesotho, Malawi, South Africa, Tanzania, and Zambia, working in collaboration with the Mozambican Defense Forces and Rwandan troops to combat acts of terrorism and violent extremism. The mission, known as SAMIM, has been in Mozambique since July of 2021 and was able to destroy the terrorist bases, reduce the number of attacks, and return to the functioning the public and private institutions to normal. However, Webster Zambara, a senior project leader of peace-building initiatives at the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation in South Africa, predicted a long road ahead before terrorism is vanquished in southern Mozambique. Zambara spoke with VOA Thursday from his base in Cape Town over WhatsApp.
I would not say losing the battle, but at the same time, not winning the war against terrorists. And this is not something unique. If you look at Boko Haram in West Africa, it has been there for about 15 years now. If you look at Al-Shabaab in East Africa, it has been there for more than 10 years.
The insurgency in northern Mozambique began in 2017 and already has caused close to 6,000 deaths, leading to the displacement of more than 1 million people. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
There are at least 8 billion people in the world, with millions suffering from inequality and discrimination. The United Nations says the world's population continues to grow, although the pace is slowing down due to a rise in infertility and old age in many developed countries. At the same time, vulnerable people, including women, young people, and people with disabilities, are experiencing challenges. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
World Population Day is celebrated each year on the 11th of July to raise awareness and to remind the international community to address global population issues. This year, the world is advocating for improved reproductive health, gender equality, and sustainable development to ensure a better future for all. Speaking virtually during the 30th anniversary of the International Conference on Population and Development, Deputy Executive Director for Programs at the United Nations Population Fund, DNA Keita, said, despite the achievements witnessed in the last 30 years, a lot has not been achieved as inequality is still on the rise.
Many objectives remain unfulfilled. There are still large inequalities in maternal and access to family planning between and within countries. People with disabilities, ethnic and religious minorities, refugees, migrants, and the homeless, and many others continue to face multiple forms of discrimination and exclusion.
According to the United Nations Development Program, the world's population is projected to reach 9.7 billion by the year 2050. Among the countries with the highest population globally are India, China, the United States, Indonesia, Pakistan, Nigeria, and Brazil, which has a population of more than 200 million people. Vatican City is the least populated with 526 people as of the 2024 statistics.
Today, there is unprecedented demographic diversity in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. Population are young and rapidly growing. In much of the rest of the world, fertility rates have declined, population have rapidly aged, and some countries are seeing their population shrink. Climate change has accelerated to a climate crisis, threatening the lives, livelihood, and prospect of people around the world.
Conflict has contributed to the highest number of displaced persons in the world, moving from villages to urban centers or from country to country in search of a better life. Franz Celestin is the chief of mission at the International Organization of Migration in Somalia.
What we've seen in the last few years due to the severe impacts of climate change and because the land can no longer provide, we have young men and women leaving the villages to come into the major cities. So we've seen that economic effect on population movement and also on migration.
DNA Keita says World Population Day this year reminds the international community to invest in data collection as a way of understanding problems, tailoring solutions, and driving progress.
The only way to leave no one behind is to count everyone. This day reminds us to ask who still goes uncounted and why. Today, we commit to scale up effort to ensure that data system capture the full range of human diversity.
The UN says despite the strides achieved in addressing equality, there is still discrimination, with women globally seen to be poorer than men. Women are also subjected to gender-based violence. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
Sudan's warring parties are in Switzerland for UN-led talks aimed at brokering possible local ceasefire to facilitate aid and protect civilians. But only one side showed up for the start of discussion on Thursday. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in France, where Africa is making history at the prestigious Tour de France as Biniman Grimé sprinted to his third victory at this year's Tour de France. But overall contender Primoz Roglic lost significant time after a late crash on stage 12. Eritrean Grimé became the first black African to win the Tour de France stage, with his opening win on stage 3 and also triumphed on stage 8. After winning stage 12 for his third stage win of Tour de France 2024, Biniman Grimé says he's full of confidence.
From the start of the tour, I feel I knew I could do good result if I have the right time, the right wheel. So I proved the last three sprint, if I am in good position, I can able to win. Especially today, we don't have any stress. We think the breakaway will arrive for us is the best, but we don't want to take any risk.
From cycling to athletics, despite recent doping and age cheating issues, Athletics Kenya's Director of Youth and Development, Barnaba Kurie, has expressed confidence in the Kenyan team to the Paris Olympics, calling it one of the best ever assembled. A total of 83 athletes will compete in athletics, fencing, judo, men's rugby sevens, women's volleyball, and swimming. Kurie said one indicator that Kenyan athletes will do well at the Olympics is the impressive times recorded during the trial ahead of the Paris Games.
This was the best trials we have ever had so far in terms of organization, in terms of performance. Yes. Because this is the first time that the athletes produced world leads, especially in 100 meters. Of course, you know 100 meters is the gem of athletics.
Yes. And now to motocross, where the 2024 FIM Junior Motocross World Championship is set to take place at the Netherlands on the 13th and 14th of July. These prestigious events will gather young motocross talents from 38 nations, all competing to bring glory to their countries. Uganda will be represented by 8 riders at this year's FIM Junior World Motocross Championship. Arthur Bleek Jr. is the Federation of Motorsport Clubs of Uganda Vice President in charge of motorcycling.
This is a championship which attracts all the best riders all over the world, and we are very delighted to be able to participate in this event. This is definitely going to step up the level of motocross in Uganda at the junior level.
Namibia has been selected to host the first ever Africa Traditional Games. The decision was announced during the signing ceremony of the host agreement between the African Traditional Sports and Games Confederation and MTC Dome Namibia. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500, and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.